Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode, Dave, what is it you just told me?
95, and it's Mel Blunt's birthday today.
Birthday. How old is he today?
64 years young, I believe.
Yeah, it's almost time for him to retire.
Yeah.
Hey, one of the guys, he might be able to go out there and give you a few plays, you know?
Yeah, you know, talk about people that change the complexion of the game. They put in that rule to fight you, you know, because that guy would just beat up receivers.
There is no question. I had the pleasure of caddying for Mel Blunt when I was about 15 years old. So, you know, it was toward the end of his career after they'd won the Super Bowls. He couldn't have been a nicer guy. He's got that program in Georgia. You know, I hate to draw any analogy to Jerry Sandusky, but Mel Blunt was kind of before that doing great things for disadvantaged kids. And he would come up to the Pittsburgh area and be involved in that stuff. And he just couldn't have been a nicer guy, but a physically imposing guy. And you're absolutely right. You know, you think about guys who changed the game, and Lawrence Taylor might be one of the first. But, you know, they changed the rules because of guys like Mel Blunt. And, you know, he is the poster boy of a big, imposing physical cornerback who beat the crap out of receivers.
Yeah, they were, you know, NFL Network this past week has kind of had some stuff dedicated to the Steelers. And Easter Sunday was one of them, and they replayed that the top 10 Steelers of all time, and of course Blunt, you know, they show Blunt on there, and boy, just reliving some of those memories, the way he manhandled those guys was fun to watch.
You remember those guys? So a lot of those guys had their forearms taped up pretty good. You know, that's what I remember, is seeing those guys. I mean, even a guy like, you know, occasionally Jack Ham, but I mean, you'd see some of those guys, those DBs. You know, I don't know what was under the tape, but man, they would come swinging with that forearm across the head level, and it was, you know, that's what you did. I mean, those were the rules of the day, and that's why part of the reason, you know, things are changing now. But I mean, in terms of the rules of the day and the way the game was played, there weren't a handful of guys better than Mel Blunt. He might have been, you know, the best there was.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Dave, it's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com. Hopefully, you guys are getting all your info. All your draft updates up to date on his website. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Steelers Depot, and you can follow me on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. And I'll just plug, if you're a Pirates fan, as we get the season underway, you can follow me on at DT on Pirates. So I'm involved in a podcast over at BucksDugout.com that's much like this, but obviously we spend our time talking about the Pirates. Dave, as you said before we got on, it's a big week with the season opening in baseball and hockey coming in Pittsburgh. But doesn't mean there's quiet time in football. We might have a little quiet time after the OTAs, you know, the end of June. Basically, the month of July really is the quiet time. But it's really gearing up now with the draft.
Absolutely. We've got a few more pre-draft visitors to pass along if you haven't been able to keep up with this. And also a free agent visit. Tight end Leonard Pope, who played for the Arizona Cardinals and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Big boy, 6'8".
Big boy. Too bad he can't block worth a shit. But, yeah. He's a pass-catching kind of tight end, a huge target. Todd Haley has familiarity with him, you know, with the Arizona Cardinals and the Kansas City Chiefs. He was a guy that was a third-round pick out of Georgia back in 2006. I think he has 102 career receptions for 973 yards. This is a guy that, they're probably kicking the tires on for after the draft. Even if they were to draft a tight end, later this month, I think this is a guy that you could see get signed to, a minimum 1-year contract to come in to compete for a roster spot there, especially with Wesley Saunders going to be missing the first 4 games of the season. So not too surprising of a visit there. I would not expect any signing, of course, to be announced, you know, as we're in this 10-day countdown to April 20th. They get Mike Wallace situation behind
them. Let's not go a podcast without mentioning Mike Wallace. We're 10 days till April 20th.
Hey, you know what the fear is going to be after that, David? Oh, Mike Wallace is going to hold out now.
So that ain't happening.
We're going to be talking about Mike Wallace all summer. So dispelling the rumors and the bleats.
I'm not going to listen.
And, hey, not too far behind that. Well, the Antonio Brown, the fear of losing Antonio Brown's already in full swing now, too. So
fortunately, you know what's going to happen in between? We're actually going to get at least 16 games of real football.
Yeah, absolutely. And people tend to forget that. I guess people tend to walk around with that black cloud hanging over their head. I choose not to be one of those. But some other pre-draft visitor, Akeem Hicks, who we knew was coming to town, defensive end out of Regina, Canada. This guy projects as a five-technique defensive end, probably going to be a seventh round or an undrafted free agent type signing. To bring into camp there. It kind of impressive on tape, but against lower competition, kind of gets himself caught inside several times on some tape I've looked at. Missouri tight end Michael Agnew, this is a guy that kind of saw his production drop when who was the quarterback over there? What, Chase Daniels?
Chase Daniels, yep.
Yeah, when he left there, his production kind of dropped down there. But this is a guy that's a kind of a tall drink of water as well. I forget his exact measurements. I think he goes, 6'5 and a quarter, 252. What does not show up, I did some homework on him. You know, he's not a guy that's asked to block quite a bit there at Missouri. There's not much tape you can find. You would have trouble in his career putting together a five-minute clip reel of him with his hand in the dirt. So he's pretty much a pass-catching tight end, kind of has a long stride, if you ask me, does use his body well. So he's a guy projected probably third, fourth, early fifth round that the Steelers brought in for a pre-draft visit today. Southern Cal defensive end Nick Perry, who projects as a 3-4 outside rush linebacker at the next level here. Real interesting guy, not the most agile, especially when you look at his 20-yard shuttle time, but he does have some good straight-line speed. He can get after the quarterback off the edge. One trick pony, though, as far as moves, of course, that's kind of be expected. He just dominates off of his sheer power, had good combine numbers, good on the bench, kind of gets a little bit upright at times, kind of has problems when he gets caught inside on gaps, but not afraid to chase either. You know, he projects as an outside linebacker. I kind of say kind of a not-so-athletic Lamar Woodley would be my initial impression of him. Good against the run, but definitely I think he projects as outside linebacker. So the question goes, you know, how serious are they with you know, of course you have Jason Worlds entering his third year. They drafted Chris Carter recently.
Dave, that's a good question because I was just thinking about it while you're talking about it. And, you know, my initial reaction is, again, just thinking about it now is, yeah, you know, they're not going there in the first two rounds. I mean, a guy like Nick Perry is not going to be on the board. What's the point of bringing him in? But, you know, you stop and think about things, and it's just – you just never know because the Steelers put such a premium on that position. You could argue, you know, aside from quarterback, it's the most important position in the Steeler organization. And, you know, we've talked about it in another podcast. This is not a condemnation of James Harrison, but – there's a reasonable chance that James Harrison's not around after this coming season. And, if you know, you and I aren't privy to enough game action of Chris Carter and really even not enough of Jason Worlds to have a great idea. Obviously, the coaching staff knows a lot more. And if they're not really high on those guys, I guess there's an outside chance they could go that way in the second round. I mean, I'd be surprised, but I do think third, fourth, fifth round, they'll always look at that area.
Well, Nick Perry, if he's there on the board at the end of the second round, or you know, when the Steelers pick, I mean that's extreme value there. Right. I think a lot
it's
of what
because some people still think he could go in the first round.
Yeah, I mean a lot of people view this guy possibly as a 4-3 defensive end too. So it's just not the you know his skill set is just not that of a 3-4 outside linebacker. Some people might view him as a pass rushing defensive end as well, and maybe somebody you could do some hybrid stuff with, kind of like Suggs from the Ravens, you know, as well. So, you know, I think if the Steelers are going to get this guy, I think it's at the end of round one, and it would be an indictment, I think, on what they think of Jason Worlds and Chris Carter at the same time. Let's face it. I mean, Jason Worlds, it was good to see him on the field last year, but it was an up and down type season for him. Not very dominant whatsoever in any facet of his game. We did see him increase his ability to drop in coverage, though. I think that's one thing that stuck out for me, is him learning the better learning where his position is on some of those zone drops, on especially at outside left linebacker spot when Woodley was down there. But let's face it, I mean, Woodley's not going anywhere for a while unless injury strikes. Now, you did mention James Harrison, and although we'll have him for this year, I agree there are some questions after this year with him. Is Chris Carter that guy over there, or is Jason Worlds able to step in that side? So if they took Perry, even if he was considered the best player on the board, you're talking a couple of years at least for him to learn the system to get any playing time whatsoever. And I think the Steelers kind of would be tempted to go that way if indeed they were not impressed with Worlds or Carter.
Yep. I think we're exactly on the same page there.
And Perry played both sides. You know, there's film on him playing both sides at USC. So he can give you the versatility there.
Right. Is that all? Did we cover all three guys who came in there?
Those are the three today. And then
we had the kid from Cal. I don't know if we talked about him on the last.
No, we didn't.
So.
Michael Kendricks, Cal linebacker, projects inside, of course. A little bit undersized, measured in at the combine, 5'11", 1'8", 239, 31 5/8-inch arms to go along with 9 3/8 hand size. Ran a 4.47 at the combine with a short shuttle time of 4.19. So that means, and when you look on tape, he has the agility there. He sometimes has the temptation to run around block sometimes, but at the same time, he's not afraid to come up and take on blockers, in a buck-type role inside. He definitely fits as a 3-4 inside linebacker at next level. Because of his size, though, he does tend to get swallowed up at times, so that is a little bit of concern. But, everything on tape shows this kid could be he drops great. He's a three-down linebacker, in my opinion. The only concern really would be his size, but I think he plays larger than what he measures up. And this is a guy the Steelers could definitely have their eyes on at the end of the, when they pick in the second round. So,
and he's a guy who's, our buddy Sigmund Bloom, he is really high on this guy in terms of the film he's watched. He really thinks that it doesn't expect that he could go end of the first round, but he's really moved up in his eyes as a guy who, certainly a second round talent, if not higher than that.
Most definitely. And I think it's asking too much for a guy like with his skill set and all to fall to the third. So, second round would be the place that you're going to take him. But, after you get past the Luke Kuechly's and the Dante Hightowers, Kendricks is probably right around there to me, a better fit than James Michael Johnson, who I'm high of, out of Nevada. I think Johnson can be had a couple rounds later. When you get much deeper into these inside linebackers, though, David, then you have the Vontaze, Burfacet out of Arizona State, who this guy really realistically could go undrafted at this point.
I saw somebody saying that, it's always speculating on all these guys, but yeah, for those who don't remember, he's a guy who really ran slow at the combine, and he's had a bunch of attitude issues at Arizona State. I think he got suspended from the team for a few games, so there's all sorts of red flags. And then when he didn't perform like the athlete people thought he was, he went from a guy who some people had projected end of the first round, second round, to fifth, sixth, seventh, or as you said, not drafted. I think he's kind of now back in the picture of people saying, okay, is this a sleeper guy who now, because everybody's got turned so hard against him, that there's maybe real value there in the fifth round or something like that. I'll be very interested to see, these red flag guys, these attitude character guys, I think are the most interesting guys, because as you pointed out, some teams take them off their board completely. Some teams are going to take the flyer. And the DB from Janoris Jenkins from Florida, who went to, I think, Alabama State or whatever it was, he is kind of the epitome of this guy. And I think what was impressive about him is he addressed all this stuff at the combine, I think, as well as you can. You can't you know, running from your pass is probably not the way to go. And he handled that pretty well. And, you know, Mel Kiper and various other guys, I think Greg Cassell, say he is the best pure cover corner in the draft, clearly. So, you know, in a normal situation, that puts you in the top 10. And there are people who think he doesn't go in the first two rounds. So, yeah, like you said, perfect is one of those guys.
Absolutely. And when you get on down, I mean, it's not a deep class as far as good, solid 3-4 inside linebackers that can play that buck role. And, you know, there's talk about Bobby Wagner. This guy's been, you know, banged up, of course. You know, how far can he drop? You know, he would be a nice prize. I've got him rated as my number 3 inside linebacker currently, just ahead of Michael Kendricks. You know, when you get on down the list, there's some good prospects. You know, the kid out of West Virginia, Najee Good, you know, kind of a later round guy. You know, has the basics, doesn't flash overly quite a bit on film, but you got to remember he comes from West Virginia and that Bill Stewart program when Bill was there. So Tomlin has a lot of information, I'm sure, on him, you know, heading into this draft over the years as well, too. But, you know, it just gets thin quick, David, with this inside linebacker position. That's why I fully expect the Steelers to address it probably in the first three rounds here.
Yeah, I know, no question about that. And we've mentioned some of these guys. Well, Dave, let's get a little more position focused here. You know, next on Friday, we'll kind of clean things up and look at corners and wide receivers. We've touched on those a little bit, but we'll spend our time on Friday looking at those two positions. But, you know, we talked about kind of the high-end tackles in the last podcast. We talked about the three guys. They're kind of three guys on top of the list. And then there's a group of other guys. But you got into a little bit of the guards, and I kind of stopped you just because we had gone on 50 minutes. But we've covered DeCastro as kind of, you know, if guys like Keekly, DeCastro, you know, guys who are at Poe, if they're there at 24, the Steelers are going to take a hard look at these guys. It's generally the consensus is not one of those three guys is going to be available at 24, and DeCastro is the one guard. But Dave, take us through some of the other kind of interior alignment. Obviously, with a Pouncey in the fold, center's not a position of need, but the kid from Wisconsin who can play both guard and center is a guy. And then you had started to mention a few of the other guys.
Yeah, I've made my feelings known about Cordy Glenn, and you know it's all dependent.
And we had a little talk about that with a few guys who now there is a school of thought that the conversation, I'll just recap quickly the conversation you, I, and I think I don't know it was Sid or Sig or if it was somebody else had on Twitter is that he thinks his footwork is good, his kickout's good, and he's he can be a left tackle, and he's kind of got a mix of the kid from Ohio State and the kid from Iowa in terms of frame and quickness. And he thinks he can be a left tackle possibly and certainly a right tackle. And I know you felt like he's kind of a mauling guard and he's a little top heavy. But why don't you take us through a little more of what you've seen on film?
With Glenn, you know, dating back to the Senior Bowl, and I've mentioned this before, you know, he played both left guard and left tackle at Senior Bowl. And he looked better at left tackle, looked lost inside the phone booth there. And, you know, that says a lot. I mean, to me, he looked very top-heavy, lots of flaws. I just don't like him at guard. I mean, he's gotten away at Georgia by being a mauling type guy, as you mentioned. I think his best home where he ends up is a right tackle at the next level. I also worry about him. I mean, he comes off as not the brightest candle on the cake either. And those type guys, I just worry about at next level. Now, he can kick over to play left tackle, so he does have that versatility. He can play guard, but you know, it's also his weight. I mean, 348, to hear him talk, too, he struggles to kind of keep that weight, too. This is a guy I have a feeling that can easily, you know, wind up a couple of training camps down the road showing up at 360, you know. Just that kind of build and that frame, and I worry about a player like that. Amini Sitatolu out of Midwestern State is a guy that can project inside. He's a great, great run blocker. And he's another one I think that I mean, he can definitely go to the second level. He has a lot of technique flaws coming from a small school like that. Played some tackle there, so he does have the versatility there as well. I don't think he's a full-time tackle, though, with his range and all like that. But he is one of the top guards. Of course, one of the big things as a reinstated, as I state again, is just the competition that he faced at Midwestern State. Brandon Brooks is a guy you'll constantly hear me talk about. This is a guy, to me, that can play both guard positions. He can play in a pinch. He can play both tackle positions, but realistically is a more of a right tackle if you needed him in a pinch type situation. Once again, small, you know, playing at Miami, Ohio, the competition, you know, not as high there. That's a big question about him. He was not invited to he was a combine snub, but he answered all the questions at his pro day that the Steelers offensive line coaches even worked him out through those drills. So the interest is definitely there. He's made a pre-draft visit to Pittsburgh. Here's the thing. Everybody keeps saying, in fact, someone on the blog, on my blog just this morning, I think, says, well, Mel Kiper has him going in the second round. And, you know, hey, good for Mel Kiper. But, you know, a little piece of trivia that I threw out on Twitter last night, and really history, you know, it's hard to transfer it year to year when it relates to the draft. Who was the last player that did not get a combine invite that was drafted in the first two rounds?
You got that on top of your head?
Yeah, Mike Mitchell, the safety out of Ohio University by the Raiders. And that was, what, 2009, I believe. So
no surprise it was the Raiders.
No surprise. This is a guy that flashed, of course, the speed at the at his pro day. So Al Davis, you know, was all over that. So, and Mitchell has, I think Mitchell's performed well at the next level, but not saying that just because a guy gets a snub to the combine, you know, is automatically thrown out of the first two rounds. But, hey, you know, we've gone a few years here and it only being a defensive back with good speed that's cracked the first two rounds. I think because of the way the draft goes and the way guards get disrespected pretty much in round one, it'll drop somebody like Brooks to the third round, and I think the Steelers have a solid chance of getting them there. Kevin Zeitler is another kid out of Wisconsin. Went and watched some more tape on him just recently from the game against the Oregon Ducks, the bowl game. This guy is smart, loves film study, really, really looks good on tape, really a mauler, good in pass protection, even better as a run blocker, good to get at second level there. So definitely a guy, I don't think he's first round in the first round material. I think he's a guy that could very possibly, you know, it would take some sort of miracle, I think, for him to drop down to the Steelers second round pick, but I'm not going to rule it out completely. Kalichi Osa-Malay, Chris Kimoato Jr., I hate to make the kind of comparison there, kind of a nasty guy, has some character concerns. That might be enough there alone to keep him off the Steelers draft board. Another guy that could go second, early third type round there.
How about the kid from Midwestern State? Still a lot, what I'm talking about.
That's the guy I just talked about earlier. Sitatalu. He's the guy that.
Sitatalu. Right. Yeah. Well, you don't think he can be there at the end of the second round?
I think he could. I mean, some people got him thrown into the bottom of the first round. Yeah, I think there's a chance he could be there. Technique flaws are pretty hard to get over. He's inconsistent with his punches off the line. He does have good foot quickness. He's going to take some time, though. But he is one of the top guards in the class, and he has as much upside as Brandon Brooks from Miami of Ohio, in my opinion.
Right, and you know the kid that we haven't talked about, who's already seen the Steelers, is Lucas Nix. He's a guy who I don't think was nearly as productive at Pitt as they thought he'd be. What are your thoughts on him?
Very athletic, to me, all around, but not dominant in any one side. One facet of his game, I'm saying he's not an overly dominant run blocker. He's not a dominant pass protector. So, thus, he's a guy that's, in my opinion, is probably a I don't know, probably a fourth round, third, fourth round type guy there inside. He does have a nasty attitude, though, and you know, a good character. The Steelers met with him at the combine as well. So he blocks down good inside. To me, just not one of the top guys in the draft, though, as far as interior guys go.
Yeah, I think most people think look at him, as you said, a third or fourth round pick. It'll be interesting, you know, as I said, when you're looking at game tape, he's a guy who I think at Pitt, they always thought he could do more, and probably didn't quite live up to the expectations that he had. There are guys when you go further down and we're just, we're just touching on regular guys. But Dave, when we talked about the, kind of the three, you know, potential first round picks at tackle, Iowa, Stanford, and Ohio State, those three guys. But then I don't know that we went much further on than that in guys. Is there a name or two that jump out at you for the guys at tackle?
Well, wrap up the go. Someone will get mad if I don't mention Brandon Washington from Miami. He's another,
oh, yeah, I thought you said him. Okay.
Another guy, second-round grade, in my opinion. Very mature kid from what I understand. Good kid.
And we talked about how the Steelers had, 25 guys down at the
floor. Sure, absolutely. Everybody and their brother was down there, except probably Mr. Rooney. It wouldn't surprise. He wasn't on the signing sheet from what I understand there, but they had a lot of people there, especially from the offensive side of the ball there to watch him. So I would not rule him out as a second-round prospect. And he's a type guy, too, of everybody on the list, too, David. I think he's a guy that could come in right away. And play. I just don't know about him long term, and his play. But I think he's probably the most rounded, although not overly dominant in one phase of his game. Those, the tackles, David. The top three you mentioned, and Jonathan Martin's still a guy I think could be on the board when the Steelers pick it at 24. In fact, he was in my last mock draft. We'll have to see where he falls and where the real interest is in him. Outside of that, you got Mitchell Schwartz, a guy, out of the University of California, real athletic guy, looks more, in my opinion, a guy to play on the right side at the next level because of his speed. Probably a guy, second, third round would be my guess, depending on how quick these tackles come off the board. We mentioned, too, Bobby Massey's been flying up the draft board.
Yep.
Out of Mississippi. He's a guy that the Steelers had in for a pre-draft visit. Look, this guy has a nice kick. I mean, great footwork, in my opinion. Inconsistent with his hands. And one of the flaws that you see written about him that you actually see on tape is he lets pass rushers come to him, and he doesn't attack them off the line. I think that's a minor technical flaw that can be solved right off the bat on him, and I really think he looks good at the next level as a guy that could contribute, later half of the first year, as far if an injury was to pop up, sort of like Marcus Gilbert. You don't want to see a guy thrown that quickly into the fire. I think he is a right tackle guy primarily, though. I think he could play left in a pinch because of his footwork there, though. When you get...
Dave, what's interesting about this draft, and you talk about, some positions there's not a lot of depth. It seems to me like at tackle, when we get past the second round, there are going to be six or eight guys that, people have a grade on that's, somewhat similar, whether it's Datko from Florida State, whether it's Saunders from both the Florida State tackles. You got Allen from Illinois, Adcock from Oklahoma State, the kid Potter from Boise State, Mosley from Auburn, Ryan Miller from Colorado. I don't know how to say Zusevics.
Zusevics, I don't know. I haven't watched any tape on Marcus
all
yet.
These guys are kind of, third or fourth round guys, and I wonder if the Steelers find a guy they really like there. And I hate to look at the receiving success they've had taking guys in the third and then the sixth round, and Wallace and Brown, and everybody knows the story Sanders. But you say, okay, well, we're not going to get one of those guys at the top, or that's not value at one. We're going to wait until three or four to go. To go tackle. Now at guard, maybe it's a tad different, but at tackle, I could see that happening.
Well, the problem is, as you said, it's top loaded class heavily. Once you get past Schwartz, in my opinion, and Bobby Massey, you know, you get past those top six, it drops off, in my opinion, considerably. And that's why I think that when they're looking at some of these guards that they're looking at, I think they're looking at a few of these guys that have the position flexibility, you know, that can play tackle in a pinch. It would not surprise me, David. You know, I mean, let's face it, they drafted Marcus Gilbert last year. He's going to be your left tackle. Willie Colon, they signed to a big deal recently, you know, last offseason. So, he, you know, they expect him to be there. Whether or not he kicks inside later or not, you know, is yet to be seen. I just can't see if they don't get one by round three. I would say wait, because as you said, I think all these guys become the same person later on down as far as their draft grades go, and I don't think there's a lot of value there. So why not draft a guard in round two? You know, that gives you the position flexibility that the few of the guys that we mentioned there. Being, and that, of course, being Brandon Brooks. I hate to keep bringing up his name, but I really am in love with this kid. And also, you know, maybe even Brandon Washington can kick outside as well. And Cordy Glenn, who I'm totally, you know, not on board with, he does give you the position flexibility there. So outside of those top six tackles, David, if they don't get one in the first two rounds, three rounds, I say wait. And I'm talking wait round six or seven.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, you also got Travis Turner there, who they re-signed back, kind of a developmental guy, huge kid.
Yeah, we talked about him. He's got three sets of twins.
Yeah, three sets of twins. So this guy needs to work.
This guy needs a job.
Yeah, this guy needs to work. You know, they have looked at, you know, we don't know what they're going to bring in as far as free agents here after the draft. They looked at Demetrius Bell, who, of course, signed with the Eagles.
And you were dead on about his contract. He signed a five-year deal, but I think it goes to $8.5 million option in the second year. So it's a one-year deal. No question. You were right about that.
Yeah, and we'll have to see how this plays out. But, I mean, I could absolutely see a scenario where the Steelers come out of the draft of the first four rounds with only an offensive guard that has some tackle versatility. So, you know, I like this Bobby Massey kid, but I thought maybe the Steelers might be able to steal him around three possibly, but the way that the attention he's getting right now, there's some people that even think he could go at the end of round one, which I think is a little bit of a stretch, but I think he's definitely an early to mid round two guy right now as far as his draft stock's concerned.
Yep. Okay, Dave. Well, we've covered most of the stuff. Let's just circle back just to Alabama for a second, because they're an interesting team and they're going to have a lot of guys taken here in the early, you know, in the early rounds. I mean, in the first two or three rounds, Dont'a Hightower is probably the college player that has been most linked to the Steelers in mock drafts, and with very good reason. And we've talked about him extensively, and we'll talk about him more as we get closer to the draft. Explosive, I guess the one issue with him is he a three-down linebacker or a two-down linebacker? But he's a very good fit inside for the Steelers. They've talked about Mark Barron as being the best safety in the draft. And I think kind of people, I think there's a general consensus with that. But there are a couple other guys in that class who are really interesting guys. And you've got Upshaw, you've got the nose tackle, and you've got the corner. And, you know, people are, you know, they got really different opinions about where these guys are going to go and what their roles are going to be. Dre Kirkpatrick, the issue with him as the corner, who some look at as, you know, the second best corner in the draft behind Claiborne, is he too big and is he going to have to move to safety? Upshaw, there's a little question, and somebody talked to me about this the other day, is, you know, could the Steelers, if he were around, could the Steelers target him? You know, he's probably not going to be around, but if you're around, and move him inside. And then you and I talked before we got in the air about the nose tackle, who would have been a top two-round pick, but now he's got a torn ACL. So let's leave Barron off this, the safety, and assume he's going to go in the top 20 picks. And let's not talk about Dont'a Hightower, because we've talked a lot about him. But let's talk about the other three guys.
Well, definitely Upshaw, if he falls that far, it'd be hard to I think they would run up with that card mighty fast because he's an outside guy. And we mentioned the outside linebackers earlier in the episode here. He's a guy that could definitely step in for James Harrison after a year. So, and no questions asked either in my opinion. He's a guy that can get after the quarterback, can disengage quickly. I don't see why that wouldn't be the pick if he's on the board, even though it's not what we would consider an immediate need. And, you know, let's face it, too. There's some people are wondering if guys like Worlds or Carter can shift inside. There's absolutely nothing to, for us to go forward with that conversation. It would be mere speculation based on their college work. Both Carter and Worlds, were defensive ends. So, I think to go that route in this conversation would just be way off the chart speculation. But Upshaw is enough of a first-round talent, best player on the board, best value available, that if he's on the board at 24, you run that card up there and you go get him for that reason alone. You said don't talk about Barron, so we won't. Dre Kirkpatrick, wow, what a great size, unique size this kid has, 6'3". Real physical outside guy, best in zone coverage, in my opinion, not afraid to tackle, just that rare size and instincts that he has, man. There's no way that this kid's on the board at 24, in my opinion. Who else did you want
to – do you think he stays at corner or at least initially stays at corner? Because there's some thought that, you immediately could move him and have him be one of the best safeties in the game. He's a bigger guy, maybe doesn't turn his hips quite as well as people might like. But obviously we're talking about a guy who's going to go in the, more than likely in the first 20 picks of the draft.
Who was the Saints kid? Was it Jenkins?
Jenkins.
Kind of the same scenario. Wasn't he a guy that initially was projected to be a big corner, but now it's kind of transitioned a little bit?
Yeah, you know that. I don't remember what his stock was coming out of the draft, but that sounds right.
I'm trying to look it up myself, too. He's a guy, I can't remember if they've moved him to safety or not now. Seems like they have, but he's to me, that's just the same kind of mold with him. So I think initially they will, with Kirkpatrick, they will play him outside corner and go from there. And if need be, yes, he could transition into a big time safety in my opinion. So,
and then the next guy, the last guy is the nose tackle. We talked about it briefly, Josh Chapman, and what his status is and where he's going to go now that he hasn't had a chance to work. He's 6'1", 316. He's a senior. He's 22. He didn't do any of these workouts because of his injury. So what do you do? I mean, the Steelers are looking at a guy who's coming off that with Casey Hampton. Somebody's going to take him in the second round?
That's a post I threw up here this past week, David. Where is his draft stock currently at right now? This is a guy, as you said, he did not excuse the dog there. This is a guy that did not.
He wants Chapman. He's Chapman.
Yeah, in fact, I do too. I'm with him. We've watched a lot of film with him. This guy was disruptive in the center at Alabama. There's no doubt about it. If this guy was healthy, he'd be going in the first two rounds. But he's come out in a recent interview and pretty much said, I think June, July, sort of on the same timetable, I guess, as Casey Hampton is as far as being recovered fully from that surgery. And hey, don't forget, this kid played with that torn ACL as well, too, that happened, I think, in October with him. So, where is his draft stock? I mean, do you take a true 3-4 nose tackle? There's not a lot of teams. Half the teams, I guess, roughly a little less than half, are using kind of the 3-4 now. So, and not a lot of them have the need there at the position. So with that set in mind, he is a guy I think could truly be on the board when the Steelers pick in the third round. And I think that's where his draft stock is currently at. And to me, what a heck of a steal that is, especially if Casey Hampton is available to start the season in some form or fashion, even if it is to back up Steve McClendon inside. You could have Chapman inactive for the first several weeks, which he would likely be anyway, no matter if he is 100% healthy as he's learning the nuances of the 3-4 defense. To me, this is a steal. This is a guy that knows the 3-4 defense already. Of course, Nick Saban's version of it. Of course, there's going to be different changes in what Dick LeBeau does, but he's a guy that can plug the center, has good leverage inside, and to me, you know, how do you not take him in the third round if he falls there?
Yeah, obviously it will. You know, clearly goes without saying that it'll depend a little bit on who they take in the first two rounds. But if he's there and they haven't addressed the need, I'm with you. I think he's a guy. He's a talented, as you said, disruptive guy. The third round, you know, you got to be you're a tad uneasy if your third round pick, who you project to be your backup nose tackle and your starter, are both coming off knee injuries. But having said that, you know, you're drafting for the long term future of the team, and you know, hopefully you can plug and play and get it done. I don't know exactly when he got injured. Do you know when he got injured exactly?
It was October, I think, against Florida, but he played the whole season and did not have the surgery until
January.
Yeah, until January.
So he and Casey be on somewhat of the same recovery timetable.
Right, exactly. They're probably going to be exactly on the same on the same recovery table. He, you know, I think the only thing he did at his pro day was lift 20-something, high 20s, I think, reps on the bench there with him. The guy loves football, good character kid from what I understand as well, too. And if you think about it, it's a little bit different when Casey, it was his freshman year that Casey tore up his knee and came back and had a solid rest of his college career, you know, and the Steelers, of course, drafted him first overall when they are, you know, first round when they got him. You are a little bit hesitant with a guy 1 year removed from it, but like we said, Steve McClendon, it looks like they're headed that way with him as a starter and can ease Casey Hampton. And you're not, unless you got an emergency situation, Chapman's not a guy that you're going to expect to take a lot of snaps, if any, in his rookie season. So
no, and I think you and I both agree that Steve McClendon isn't an every down player, but he certainly has filled in adequately, much like Chris Hoak. I mean, he's not, he has the potential to be a guy like Chris Hoak, who, you know, look, if you need to go to him, you're not embarrassed to put him in there. You know, he's going to give you full effort and do the job. You'd rather not have to go to him for 16 games in a row. But yeah, he's a guy who I think has come on nicely from Troy, and he'll be in his third year. I think that, and we've talked about it. Neither of us are in favor of Ziggy at the nose, but I mean, if smacks of desperation, but if you're there because both Chapman and Casey are on your roster and they're not quite ready, well, you can get by for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it full time. I beat that horse to death as far as hood over the nose. But, you know, McClendon, what he does, and making a comparison to Hoke is fair, too, because this is a guy that's already given us a few snaps in the 3 technique and the 5 technique at defensive end as part of the rotation as well, too. But if you think about it, if you can keep McClendon upright, not give him that many snaps and just keep him pretty much in the base situation as not to overuse him and wear him down, you can get by through the first 6 or 7 games, in my opinion, with him as your nose tackle until Casey Hampton and until Chapman are ready. Now, of course, everybody's going to throw the name out, Mike Martin from Michigan out there. We kind of have touched on him as well, too. But this is a guy, I think, and I've read a couple of people who I admire their opinion on him as well, too. This is guys are more of a one technique defensive tackle, probably better suited as a 4-3 defensive tackle than he is at a 3-4 nose tackle. But that being said, it doesn't matter what we think, whatever defensive line coach John Mitchell thinks he can break down and turn this kid into. So there's a couple of them. You know, I think someone, who was it, the guy from NFL Network, one of their reporters, released his mock draft yesterday, and I think he had Devin Steele going to the Steelers at 24. And that, to me, that's just not a fit. To me, he's more of an outside or a true defensive tackle overall, who might be better suited outside. So I just don't see that as a fit. There's not too many true zero technique nose tackles in this draft. And of course, we beat Don Terry Poe to death over this. That being said, you know, I would not be totally shocked, I guess, if that was a pick, you know, at 24. I just can't see it happening.
All right, Dave. Well, great stuff on the lines. You know, you've got you've done a lot of great work, and it's fun talking because I sit and listen just like our listeners do to a lot of the stuff you say. So good stuff. We'll come back and we will get into the skilled positions on the outsides, the receivers, and the corners for next week's show. We'll bring you up to date on any breaking news in the NFL. Obviously, the Saints stuff, they didn't really change anything in that situation, just kind of tweaks to the suspensions, which was no surprise. Looks like Parcells is not going to step into that role, and their defensive guy, Vito, or whatever his name is going to step into the head coaching role. Other than that, not a lot of breaking news. So let's wrap things up here. And anything you want to throw out there?
Yeah, what do we got? 16 days to the draft. 10 days. My new mock draft will be out later this week in the middle of the week here. I'm finishing up on that right now, so look for that. 10 days to Mike Wallace countdown, David.
10 days to the Mike Wallace countdown.
And then we'll be hitting more on the aftershocks of that later on. Because
yeah, and as I said, look, I expect the Steelers to make a very quickly – whether it be right before the draft or right after the draft, to be looking at Byron Leftwich and Jericho Cotchery. They'll have some cap space they know will now be available, and I'd expect to see them lock those guys up sometime very soon after we get by April 20th.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's going to be quiet for probably until draft day. Check Steeler Depot for all your news and mock drafts and great articles by all my writers and all. We appreciate everybody for listening. Keep those emails rolling in, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And as David said at the top of the show, you can follow both of us on Twitter as well.
And you know, pass this along to your friends. Pass it along. There's a lot of stuff on iTunes. Make them subscribe. Get it out there. We're looking to build our audience. We're not making any money on this, but we don't ask anybody to pay, but we do ask you to tell your friends. So, as always, we'll be back with you Friday. Thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.